Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn, and you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. For this Monday, the 29th of August, it's All Things Political. Two guests this hour, starting with John Nichols. John is writing about politics for The Nation magazine as its Washington correspondent, also a contributing writer for The Progressive, and in these times, he's also the associate editor of the Cap Times, the daily newspaper in Madison, and you see him frequently on television, commentator on politics and media issues. Later in the hour, Philip Klein, senior writer for the Washington Examiner. As you can imagine, the guests will have wildly different views on what's going on in the world or their take on what's going on in the world. We'll be welcoming phone calls as we always do. The number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email address, if you'd like to use that, is talk@wpr.org. talk@wpr.org. Hello, John Nichols.
Hello, Kathleen Dunn.
How are you?
Well, I am just so glad Our Idiot Brother isn't the number one film in America.
Our Idiot Brother? Did you see it?
No, I was just listening at the end of the news there. They were running down the top films.
I know.
And I was just delighted that The Help, which is a really wonderful film, is number one, not Our Idiot Brother.
And I didn't think we would talk about films, but let's talk about The Help. I just haven't had any interest in seeing a film about, you know, white people taking care of, having black maids take care of their families and everything. I know everybody tells me you need to see it. I saw the Woody Allen film instead over the weekend, but I should see it, huh?
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah.
Yeah, it is a good one, but I should see The Help.
You really should. It's an interesting thing, and it does go back to one of the, you know, kind of difficult constructs of our time. It's like Driving Miss Daisy and other films where, you know, we tell the story of African American communities too often through the eyes of a white person coming to take a look.
Right.
But in this case, I think it, you know, there's an evolution in film. And I think what's happened with The Help is a very positive one. It becomes very clear, very early on in the film, that it is the young white woman who is learning, not the African American maids. And it's, I think, quite well produced. In fact, I will suggest something else, too.
All right.
There are far too many films, or far too few films in America where most of the dominant characters are African-American working women. And so I find it quite interesting.
All right. I will see it.
All right.
All right. I will see it. It is interesting that it's the best-selling film. What does that say?
I think it says a lot of great things about America. This film is attracting very diverse audiences. It's doing very, very well in the South. It is also attracting not just young people who are, you know, kind of a core film-going base, but also a lot of middle-aged folks and others. So I think it's crossing a lot of lines, and it's caught Hollywood way by surprise. Hmm. It's almost unprecedented for a film to open at number two, number three, and then move to number one and stay at number one. Mm-hmm. That's a word-of-mouth film. And again, I think it's a very, I think that going through film, we often tell ourselves a lot about our country and, you know, what appeals to us, what interests us. And perhaps at this moment where we have so many lingering racial and social and economic challenges, it is appealing to look at a time where, despite all of the drawbacks, America seemed to be moving toward addressing a problem and addressing a crisis.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not surprised it's successful, but I am glad it is.
All right. Well, add to your list of credits. Film reviewer.
There you go.
Well, let's start with Rick Perry, because I know Philip Klein wants to talk about Rick Perry, who seems to be at the top of the pack in the presidential race. He certainly has come on with a bang here. Is he their guy?
No. They're kind of a flavor of the month club right now. And remember who we've had as their guy. It was Sarah Palin, but she kind of doesn't look like she's going to run. Then it sort of looked like, well, okay, we're gonna give Mitt Romney his shot. And no, we didn't like Mitt Romney that much. Wow, Herman Cain, this guy's really great. He's a great speaker. Nah, forget him. Michelle Bachmann, she's our guy. No, maybe not. Rick Perry, he's our guy. So I think what it tells you about the Republican Party at this point is two very significant things. Number one, they absolutely believe that they can win the presidency in 2012. So it's a worthwhile endeavor. But number two, they're not quite sure that they've got the candidate. And the Democrats had a phenomenon like this in 1976 when Richard Nixon had resigned the White House, Gerald Ford had come in. It was a real sense that a Democrat was going to win in 76, but they didn't quite know who. And so you saw this kind of constant pattern of movement where Jimmy Carter, of course, won some early caucuses and primaries. People thought, okay, Carter's our guy. And then they're like, oh, gosh, we're not that impressed with Carter. So suddenly Frank Church gets in the race. Then Jerry Brown gets in at the end, starts winning primaries. Then Mo Udall, who'd been losing all along, suddenly starts winning, or at least doing very well. Bottom line is, it was a party that was wrestling not with the question of whether it was going to contend seriously for the presidency, but you know, when you've got that shot, then you're sort of like, okay, who's the best for us? And Perry has, for the moment, filled that role, but he's a guy who I think is going to cause a lot of second thoughts on the part of Republicans. His opposition to the 17th Amendment. I mean, this is a guy who doesn't think senators should be elected. And a host of other stances he's taken are going to be seriously examined. They're going to seem a bit too far outside the mainstream. And then his own statements on the trail. It wasn't just the idea of lynching the head of the Federal Reserve, which, by the way, I'm not sure that's just a conservative view. But it's also the freelance style. It's very appealing. It's fun for reporters to cover. But when you're talking about a president of the United States, it's something that Republican primary voters tend to be a little cautious.
Mm-hmm.
I think they'll draw back. And then the question is, and I want to emphasize this, then the question becomes, is it a default to Romney, or does somebody else get in? Because this is still very early in the process.
And that somebody else might be?
Oh, I love Paul Ryan. I know he keeps saying he isn't running.
You think he will?
Well, I don't know that, but what I am saying is, have you noticed that, you know, almost as soon as Rick Perry started to get in trouble, where they started revealing, you know, things about his past, he started having kind of bumbling statements, as Politico asked in its lead story today, is Rick Perry dumb? You know, there was this kind of broad discussion behind the scenes of whether he's, you know, as sharp a tack as some people think. As that's going on, there has again been this huge flurry of Paul Ryan talk, and not driven by Wisconsinites. You hardly ever hear Wisconsinites talking about Paul Ryan running for president. It's the intellectual conservative wing of the Republican Party, the Weekly Standard magazine, the Wall Street Journal, who really like Paul Ryan. And so don't think his moment has passed.
When you say, though, that the Republicans absolutely believe that they can win the presidency, may not be all that off base. Unemployment rate is very high. The president's numbers are going down. Don't they have good reason to believe they can win it?
Absolutely they do, without a doubt. And this is the unfairness of Barack Obama's situation, but also the reality of it. You know, Barack Obama inherited some fundamental challenges so fundamental that it is unlikely that any president of either party could have just dotted every I, crossed every T, and got things sorted out. By the same token, he has not brought a Franklin Roosevelt, Ronald Reagan certainty, a sense of clear direction to the process. And as a result, there's a skepticism about him, a sense of discomfort.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a nightmarish scenario on a reelect if you've got 10% or roughly 10% unemployment in combination with a real unemployment rate when you include the underemployed, the people who've given up looking for work, of 17-18%. I mean, you cannot get reelected with that combination. Lack of confidence in you as a leader and that level of unemployment. Obama will lose if that combination stays in place.
Is he going to be challenged from the left, do you think?
It's a hard calculus. I'm actually working on a piece for The Nation on that right now. The left is extremely uncomfortable with Obama, and I don't think it's just the left. I think that goes deep into the sinews of the Democratic Party. Many moderate Democrats are very ill at ease with Obama. They question whether he has led effectively and whether he can be reelected. You know, just the hack politicians are a little worried about the guy. And so the prospect of a challenge historically would be very likely. And remember, this is early for such a thing. Eugene McCarthy mounted his challenge to Lyndon Johnson starting in December of 1967. Pat Buchanan mounted his challenge to George Bush the first in November, December of 1991. So this is an early stage. There's plenty of time, but there's also a problem. The problem is that presidents control the nominating process to a far greater extent than they did in the 60s or even in the 90s, and the money power has become so much more dysfunctional. And that what I mean by that is that President Obama is already raising money at a rate that will make his the most expensive campaign in American history, with the possible exception of someone who might beat him. But, you know, this is going to be, there's going to be so much money flowing in that it becomes much harder to for a challenger to kind of jump in and surprise or, you know, come up fast on an incumbent. The great Wisconsin professor, University of Wisconsin professor Joel Rogers, has a phrase, starting gate equality. And what that means is you don't have to have as much money as the guy you're running against, but you do have to have enough money to kind of have your voice heard. With the ugly reality of our campaign finance system at this point, it is very much easier for incumbents to shout down a primary challenger. So I think bottom line is it's a roundabout way, Kathleen, of saying I don't think President Obama is likely to face a serious primary challenge from the left or mm-hmm. from someone in the Democratic Party. But that could shift if unemployment spikes. I mean, if in October, November, you see a real sharp spike in unemployment, then you might see somebody say, well, this just can't stand. We've got to step up.
Well, why don't you think he doesn't take on, with all the measure of his intellect and the passion that maybe we think he has, maybe he doesn't have, this jobs issue? It really is a huge issue in the country. He is the president. He can fashion the words that would put a great deal of emphasis on this and come up with some kind of program. Why doesn't he do it?
Well, first off, he's got a divided Congress. It's very, very hard. You know, that's it's not as easy to do in any kind of practical sense. And I think Obama suffers from exactly what you just described. He suffers from a sense that he has the ability to fashion a speech, to put together the words that will inspire our confidence. And the fact that he hasn't done so leads to a sense that either he doesn't get that the issue is, as you suggest, so big, so central, or that he really doesn't have an idea of how to respond to it. Now, those are two separate things. Not getting it is sort of the George Bush the dad problem, right, where he was at the grocery store and he didn't know how much milk cost or something like that. Mm-hmm. You're just out of touch. Not knowing how to respond, and I'm going to use a scary name here, that's the Herbert Hoover problem, right? That's where you know you've got a big crisis. You know that it's affecting people. You want to do the right thing, and Herbert Hoover did, but you really don't quite know. You don't see the possibilities. You don't go for the big hit. And on Obama, in Obama's case, I think you actually, Kathleen, hit on the core of the problem in your question, where you said, you know, well, we think he's so smart. I think he is so smart. I think he's a really, really sharp guy. He's so smart that he over-intellectualizes us. He thinks it through, and he realizes, you know, we're 30 years into deindustrialization in America. We don't have an industrial policy. We do not have any sort of smart approach to job growth or job retention in this country. We haven't for a long, long time. You know, the only way that we've had kind of upticks in our economy is a boom cycle, right? We have a boom, then we have a bust, we have a boom. But it's not based in a reality. I think he knows that. I think he knows we're up against some very serious challenges. And as a result, he tries to speak about it in very smart, very intellectual ways, but that doesn't connect with the visceral reality that there are tens of millions of Americans who are out of work.
Right.
And there are tens of millions more, this is the critical group, the voting class, tens of millions more who fear that they will soon be out of work.
John Nichols, our guest for All Things Political, the first half hour. John is writing about politics for The Nation. He's Washington correspondent. He writes for The Progressive. And in these times, he's associate editor of the Capital Times, the daily newspaper in Madison. And, of course, you see him frequently on television, particularly on MSNBC these days. Later this hour, Philip Klein, senior writer for the Washington Examiner, will be our guest. Our phone number, a couple lines are open for you right now. We'll go to your calls, 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Send an email if you would like to do that. talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our number two of our program will be talking about science education. Our guest believes partially because of a result of No Child Left Behind, there is not nearly enough emphasis placed on science, and that's where the jobs are. Our guest will be Margaret Honey, who's president and CEO of a very interesting organization based in New York, the New York Hall of Science. John Nichols is with us now. We go to phone calls, starting with Doug in Pell Lake. Hi, Doug.
Hi, Kathleen. I think that your guest sort of hit it on the head with his thought that intellect not necessarily works. You need the ability. Track record really becomes important here, especially in this day and age. And Obama simply doesn't have it. I mean, he's never really managed anything. He's never really had to prioritize anything. And so the net effect is intellect notwithstanding, the ability to make good speeches. You need a particular type of businessman or a particular type of turnaround man, not like a Herbert Hoover. And I'm interested to see what your guest thinks about that.
Thanks, Doug.
Well, I think, you know, I always look for a smart call from Pell Lake. And and Doug goes to some core issues. I don't think that – I'm going to disagree on the concept that you need a particular type of, quote-unquote, businessman. Government's different than business. Trying to manage government like a business often fails. One of our most successful presidents, in my opinion, Dwight Eisenhower, was never a businessman, but he was a general. He had done some remarkable things in his lifetime. And some of our other very successful presidents have been people who've come out of a political life, someone like Franklin Roosevelt, who had a long political career. He could even be an actor and maybe do a good job as president. But where Obama's challenges, I think, goes to a deeper reality. He came up at a very hopeful moment, at a moment when Americans were very much believing in the possibility of doing a lot of things. That hopeful moment crashed into a sharp economic decline, sort of a reality break, where we realized that this boom and bust economy developed not so much by our presidents, but by Alan Greenspan, who history will record as the most hideously inept head of the Federal Reserve ever. And so we end up in a situation where a guy who came in on hope and change runs into having to manage crisis. I don't know that his skill set prepared him for that, and I do know that President Obama has hired miserably for advisors, his people who have been giving him counsel on how to respond to this. Folks from like the University of Chicago Economics School and stuff like that, they haven't been the right players. And as a result, this decent man who has a great deal of intellect and I think a great desire to do right by America and to in a relatively moderate way move this country toward a more functional set of approaches has not connected with the zeitgeist, with the passion of the American people. And it's a challenge. It's one that will write the story of the 2012 campaign.
Who do you
if
think
Obama connects, he'll succeed. If he doesn't, he could well be beat.
And who do you think? My thoughts are that the strongest candidate against him is somebody who has, you know, a health care plan that he's put in place in Massachusetts, who's got this business background, that Mitt Romney would be the best Republican candidate to run against Obama. And I think he'd give him a run for his money.
I think you're probably right, Kathleen. I always trust your political judgment. But let me put it another way. Imagine if Mitt Romney had gotten the Republican nomination in 2008, and then the economy had collapsed. And Romney, unlike John McCain, who absolutely was clueless as regards how to respond to that moment, if Romney had stepped forward with a lot of clarity, with a sense of what he really wanted to do and how he wanted to do it, maybe even kind of rising above the moment, I think Romney would have done much better than McCain in 2008. So you're probably right that, especially in this moment, Romney's got the skill set and the background. The problem is Republicans don't like him. I mean, they really, really don't like the guy. They don't like the fact that basically everything you just ran down, that he had a successful health care program, or at least an attempt at a health care reform, that he's tried to be very, very moderate, that well into the 1990s, in fact, even into the 21st century, he was very strongly pro-life or pro-choice on the abortion issue, and that he's actually got a relatively humane record as regards gay rights and a host of other issues. It puts him out of sync with a lot of the passions of the Republican Party at this moment. And as a result, he will, if he is the Republican nominee, I think you're right, he might be able to give the president a run for his money, but I'm not sure he can make it. There's another guy running, too. I mean, John Huntsman from Utah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and Huntsman's track record, he's a very successful businessman, very successful governor who really brought Utah forward in all sorts of ways. And then U.S. ambassador to China. Come on. I mean, international
come
experience
on.
Is the highest
right.
level. But Huntsman doesn't have a chance that I can see, a chance in heck of getting the
right.
Republican nomination.
Let's go to Scott in Green Bay. Hi, Scott.
Good morning. Well, I'm in complete agreement with your guest. I mean, my point is, do you blame the press a little bit for this? Because here you had this individual, Barack Obama, who I believe, and I'm a conservative, I believe he's incredibly intellectual, a bright, nice guy, but doesn't have the skill sets to be president, the toughest job in the world. And you had a press corps during the election that Evan Thomas said he was godlike, that he was the one. And there was really nothing to base that on. There was no substance there. There was really nothing to fulfill these great, lofty expectations for a man that just really didn't have the background or the experience to be what people were calling the one. We're coming up on 2 years in December when Barack Obama's speech said he was going to focus like a laser on jobs. That's him verbatim. And we've got 2 years of really no focus at all. And I'm just wondering if it's a mismatched skill set, that he's a great guy, very intellectual, he'd be brilliant and very successful doing something else, but he's just not a good president.
Very good question. And here's the thing. I come to writing about politics from the only credible place, and that is a background in rock and roll. And and having spent a lot of years around music, one of the remarkable things about the music press is that every once in a while they'll take some artist who's just come along, very fresh, and they'll say, "Wow, this is it. This artist is the future. This is the hottest thing going." And you'll see it cover of Rolling Stone, cover of, you know, all the magazines, talked about on MTV. Everybody's all excited. And then the artist will, you know, kind of go up. And after a couple of months, people, the same press, the same music press will say, "Oh, my God, what an inept, you know, boy, that's, I guess we kind of overshot that one," or "What a loser that guy is." I think that Obama has had the best and the worst of the press. He had a press that did fall into almost a cheerleading role in some ways in 2008. People looked to presidential politics to solve all the problems of the country, and here was a chance to elect a guy and have everything come together. And I do think there was certainly an element of that then. Unfortunately, since he's become president, he has suffered from the deep anti-intellectualism and anti-realism nature of our current media system. And that is that he is held responsible for everything that goes awry. And, you know, he was sort of the Teflon candidate. Nothing stuck to him. And now he's become the Velcro president. Everything sticks to him. And so it's a problem of our media that has it tends to want to make heroes and then take heroes down, and it doesn't begin, by and large, except for, of course, Kathleen Dunn's show on Wisconsin Public Radio, give us the depth of discussion that we need.
Thanks, Scott, for the call. Mitch in Madison, our last caller for John, and then we go to a different guest with a different viewpoint. Hi, Mitch.
Hi, how are you doing?
All right, Mitch,
well,
how are you?
I thank you, Kathleen. I totally disagree with your guest. You're so typical of progressives looking for an excuse why things won't work. You asked him why the president's plans don't work, and the statement was, well, he has a divided Congress. Well, the first year he was in, he didn't have a divided Congress. And the second year he was in, he doesn't have a divided Congress. Now he wants to blame it on a divided Congress. And I think before that he blamed it on Rush Limbaugh, and he probably still does. This guy is just a talking head, and all he knows how to do is have a good time on the taxpayer's dollar. That's all he does.
John.
I think that's a little unfair to the president. The challenge of a divided Congress is not the full challenge for Barack Obama. I think it's important to understand that many presidents have had divided Congresses and successful presidencies. Obama did have a united Congress for the first, half of his term. Unfortunately, he did not take charge. He did not lead. He did not write the health care bill and then take it to Congress. He did not write the banking reforms and take it to Congress. He deferred to Congress. And I think that was a mistaken approach. I would absolutely mistaken approach. But in this second part of this term, when I refer to a divided Congress, I think the critical thing to understand is that makes it exceptionally hard for him to focus effectively on the jobs issue, because anything that he does is going to be run through an incredibly intense and I think many people think ridiculous congressional debate, and as a result. Precisely the point where the president ought to be seizing control of things and really stepping forward with a jobs program, it's very hard to imagine how he does it.
It sure is. John, thank you, as always. Nice to see him more on television, too.
Well, it's a pleasure to be with you,
thanks,
Kathleen,
John.
And I will be listening to hear what Mr. Klein has to say.
I think he may disagree with what you've said.
You take a look. It won't be on everything.
All right. Thanks, John. John Nichols, associate editor of the Cap Times. He is, he's a guy who's doing all kinds of media. He is the Washington correspondent for The Nation, contributing writer for The Progressive, and you see him all over television these days, too, because Wisconsin has been very much in the news. It's still all things political. Your calls are still pertinent to the next guest. Philip Klein is senior writer for the Washington Examiner. He has written a great deal about Governor Perry from Texas, and we'll talk with him more about Perry and about the Republicans' chance for really taking on the president in the next election and who the best candidate might be. Does he think, as I think, that it's Mitt Romney, or does he really believe that Rick Perry has a chance? So we'll be talking about that. We will talk about health care. He really believes that the Republicans need to offer ideas on health care beyond repealing what he calls Obamacare. So we'll talk about that as well and what kinds of issues they need to talk about when it comes to expanding health care reform. And we'll also talk with him about jobs and what kind of plan the Republicans will offer for getting the unemployment rate down, because it is so darn high. So we are getting him on. We have him? Yeah, we have him. All right, Philip is with us now, and we'll be welcoming phone calls again. 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655 is the number. Hi, Philip. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Before we get big into politics, what was it like to have a hurricane and earthquake in the same week?
Well, I guess it was a pretty rare situation here, but neither were that big. So, it sounds cool, but it wasn't really that big of a deal.
All right. Rick Perry in the presidential race. You've written a lot about Governor Perry. You predicted that he would be on top of the field by Labor Day, beat that by 12 days. What's his appeal? And will he be ahead of the pack for a long time?
I think so. I mean, the main appeal is that if you look at the composition of the Republican field before Perry's entrance, you basically had Mitt Romney, who has sort of executive experience as governor and as a businessman, but isn't really acceptable to a lot of conservatives for many reasons, most prominent being his championing of the health care law in Massachusetts that was a forerunner to President Obama's national health care law. And then on the other side, you had Michelle Bachmann, who sort of appeals to a lot of the conservative base, but doesn't have executive experience. So basically, Rick Perry jumped into the race, and he sort of has found that seam, that sort of sweet spot between the two of them, wherein he has the executive experience, actually more executive experience, at least at the public sector level, than Romney. And at the same time, he also has a claim to the sort of a lot of the conservative voters that Michelle Bachmann was appealing to. And for right now, he's sort of hitting that sweet spot. Whether he sort of stays on top is indicative, is more a function of whether he's able to sort of convince let's say, more establishment Republicans that he's electable in the long run and, you know, isn't going to consistently fly off the hip and, you know, make these statements that sort of, raise doubts about his electability. And also that his sort of, as more comes out about his record in Texas, conservatives still feel confident that he's sort of, one of them, or is at least acceptable enough relative to the rest of the field. I think the important thing, too, to keep in mind is that a lot of what we've seen are the national polls, but what really matters are the polls in the early states because, you know, as we saw last time, for most of 2007, Rudy Giuliani and Hillary Clinton were ahead in national polls, but really what mattered was those early states. And so we're going to have to really start to see more polling in Iowa, New Hampshire, and see how Perry's shaking up. If he's clearly ahead of Bachmann in Iowa, and then in New Hampshire, if Romney he's closing in on Romney, then I think that's a good sign. If he's sort of still struggling in both those states, then the national numbers may not prove his importance.
Do you think he's smart?
I mean, I think it's, that's always kind of, one of those questions that sort of varies in terms of, I think that someone who's, served as governor for over a decade and so forth, isn't going to be, a stupid person. I mean, I just think I think it's just silly to underestimate, his abilities and so forth.
We were talking with John Nichols about Mitt Romney, and I expressed my thoughts about this, that it seems to me as though Romney might be the strongest candidate to run against the president, with unemployment so high, with his background as a very successful businessman, and even though some Republicans may not like the health care program he put in Massachusetts, he did tackle the problem and may be able to handle this issue of jobs, which the Democrats don't seem to be able to do in a much more forceful fashion. Do you believe that he would be the strongest candidate, the most electable candidate against this president, or not?
I do not. I think that with Romney, he's always sort of faced this problem where, on paper, he kind of looks like the kind of prototypical presidential candidate. It seems like he looks good. But if you look at sort of what happened, at least in the primaries last time around, he consistently underperformed. And, you know, I remember covering that campaign pretty closely, and you talk to people, and they kind of didn't really connect with him. I think that's one of his problems that people have with him. I mean, there's a lot of different theories for why that may be the case, but for whatever reason, I think if you look at where Romney lost, or who he lost to in 2008, he lost in Iowa to Huckabee and to McCain in New Hampshire. Both candidates, you know, McCain and Huckabee, are a lot different. But what they both have in common is they're both candidates who kind of connect with people on a gut level. You have a very, you know, sort of visceral reaction to, you know, a Huckabee or a McCain. Whereas with Romney, he just doesn't really seem to emotionally connect with people. And I think that's difficult, and that's one of those intangible things in politics that...
I know what you're saying.
You know what I mean? Well, when you everything that should make sense on paper doesn't always translate in politics.
He looks like the kind of guy who's got permanent creases in his blue jeans, doesn't
he? Yeah.
And that's a hard thing to change.
And also keep in mind, too, that you're looking from the perspective that, oh, well, Romney solved the problem in Massachusetts. I mean, I take issue with that because surely, I mean, if you look at the access problems in Massachusetts and you look at the cost overruns and so forth, that it would raise questions about that. But in terms of the actual political aspects of it, I think the difficulty is that basically Romney is in this impossible position of, on the one hand, trying to say that his reforms in Massachusetts were great, and on the other hand, saying that those reforms at the national level are a disaster and need to be repealed. And it's very hard. I mean, there are various federalism arguments he's tried to make, but the bottom line is it's a very hard argument to sell. And I think that health care is actually an advantage for Republicans because the health care law is so unpopular. And I think that's one advantage for Republicans to run against the health care law. And I think that if Romney is the nominee, that it prevents Republicans from being able to run against that. And it also puts a lot of the Republican congressional candidates in an untenable position, because basically they're going to be going around attacking Obamacare, right? But how do you basically argue that, you know, every one of these candidates is going to be asked, well, how can you support Mitt Romney as your, you know, your party's nominee and say, you know, Obama's a socialist for doing this health care plan when they're both so similar? And suddenly I think that a lot of congressional candidates would be sort of tied up in knots by this. So I think there are a lot of sort of problems. Also with Mitt Romney, he has sort of a private sector background, but if you look at the race he ran against Ted Kennedy in 1994. Obviously, running against Ted Kennedy in Massachusetts is a difficult task for any Republican. But he was sort of close to Ted Kennedy in that very that 1994 year, which was a strong year for Republicans. But then Ted Kennedy ran a series of ads about all the people laid off by Romney when he was sort of his private sector background was going in and consolidating companies and making them more efficient and stuff, which is fine in the business world, but the way that plays out in the political arena is that he's sort of this businessman who's going in and laying off people and shipping jobs overseas and so forth, and that's how the sort of attacks get done. So that would be complex for Romney too.
I know that you have talked about Republicans needing to offer more on health care rather than just repeal of Obamacare, and we'll talk about that more as we progress. But I do want to get to phone calls. Our number, Philip Klein is our guest this half hour, senior writer for the Washington Examiner. Our number is 800-486-8655. and the email is talk@WPR.org. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. To your calls, Bill in Madison. Hi.
Hello. I guess what the gentleman has said, as well as your previous guest, has steered what I was going to ask a little bit. But I think both parties have a big problem in the future, not just in 2012, but in this. Obama has disappointed the left because his solution to jobs seems to be to add to H. Ross Perot's giant sucking sound approach, you know, with, you know, making more trade deals with countries like Colombia and South Korea, you know, shipping more jobs overseas. He's really disappointed at the left. And I think on the right, it seems to be that their solution to jobs is to essentially repeal the 20th century and essentially race to the bottom so that American workers are working for the same slave wages that Chinese workers are working for. And neither, I don't think the American public as a whole who thinks that either solution is a good one. And I think that eventually the thick skull of the American electorate is going to catch on to the idea that the government numbers for unemployment are way, way out of line. As Mr. Nichols said in the first half of the program, the real unemployment rate, when you add in all the people who are who've fallen off the unemployment rolls and are discouraged for years of failure of finding a job, is going to be as close to Great Depression levels.
Philip. Let's get a response, Bill.
Okay. Quickly. I mean, I do agree that the official unemployment rate understates the number of people who are actually having, you know, trouble finding jobs or who may have gone, you know, who may have, quit looking or settling for part-time jobs or worse jobs than they'd like because of the bad economy. So I'd agree with the caller on that. I disagree with the caller that the solution would be to return to protectionist trade policies. I mean, there's a huge body of economic literature, which, you know, I don't have time to go into here, but which articulates why sort of erecting trade barriers is not a recipe for economic growth. And there's a pretty much a wide consensus on this among economists.
Knowing how important it is to have a job, to have a purpose, to have an income, I think that a lot of Americans are feeling a huge disconnect with the Republicans and the Democrats on this issue and really want Washington, if they're going to do anything, address the issue of employment in this country. Why isn't anything being done?
Well, I think the reason why is that I think there's multiple reasons. I think one reason is that, you know, ultimately there's a limit to how much government can do. There's a realistic limit. The other thing is that there's drastically different visions for what needs to be done to increase to increase employment and to boost the economy. If Democrats had their way, if liberals, liberal Democrats had their way, what we'd have is a lot more deficit spending. I mean, that under the Keynesian philosophy that, recessions are caused by gaps in demand, and if the private sector isn't coming in, then the public sector has to come in and spend money to fill that demand gap and run up deficits until the economy improves. Republicans believe that government has to get out of the way, and you need fundamental tax reform, and you need to reduce the amount of the regulatory burden on businesses. So those are two drastically different visions for what needs to happen, and it's difficult to sort of split the difference.
Yeah, I understand that, but somebody's off the mark, or both parties are off the mark when so many people in this country are hurting right now. Something needs to be done. Who cares what the political philosophy is? Give me a job.
No, I mean, I'm sure that that's what a lot of people are feeling. I'm just sort of saying what the reality is. I mean, it's sort of easy to say, yeah, let's just do it and just come together. But it's just a totally different vision, and they sort of they conflict against each other.
Bill, thanks for your call. Pat in Brookfield. Hi.
Hey, I guess I have a couple of quick questions. The first thing, I think some of the failure of President Obama and the Republicans, Americans never want to hear a tough message, and our politicians are always afraid to deliver a tough message. And I think what they need to do is come together, and kind of what your guest just said, the government isn't going to hand you a job. We tried $1 trillion worth of stimulus with cash for clunkers, the homeowners credit. The Fed's done absolutely everything they can. It's not going to work. It's not the government's job to spend money to create jobs. The private sector needs to do that. All the government can do is try to make it as easy as possible on the private sector. And frankly, people need to go back and get retrained. Those that are sitting there on 2 years unemployment because the job on the factory line where they pushed a button and made $35 an hour is gone, they're not coming back. So I guess they have a decision that, okay, I'm 55 years old, so I'm just going to be on unemployment or take government services for the next 65 years until the government hands me a job. Well, I could spend that 2 years, take advantage of the various training programs that the government is offering right now, go back, get a computer degree, get in some type of technology, get a welding degree so Bucyrus can fill one of those 500 positions they have, and do something with your life. Stop feeling sorry for yourself and look in the mirror.
Philip.
I mean, I agree with a lot of what the caller said, that basically the idea is that at the end of the day, I mean, I think that we have this mistaken idea that when the economy is bad, it's, you know, the president is the CEO of the U.S. economy, and somehow he's running the economy and has to create jobs. But I think that that's a false assumption if we're being honest. I think that the reality is that there's a lot of proactive steps that I think the government can create in order to create the environment that fosters job creation. But I think that there's difficulty, as we saw with the stimulus bill, of actually producing jobs with the sort of the make work idea of temporary jobs.
Thanks for the call. Oh, I wanted to ask you about our guest the previous half hour said, be on the lookout for Paul Ryan. Republicans really do like him. He would not be really surprised if Ryan enters the presidential race. Would you that be a welcome development for you?
Paul Ryan this was rumored for a few weeks, but Paul Ryan last week pretty definitively said that he, for the final time, decided he wasn't going to run. So at this point, I don't really think that that's going to happen.
Would you like for him to?
I'm sympathetic to Paul Ryan and his ideas, and I do think there needs to be someone in the race who is sort of articulate serious visions on vision on how to bring our long-term debt under control. However, I wrote for a number of reasons. I just think it's too early in his career to try to run for president.
Mm-hmm. Kay in Lansing, Iowa. Hi.
Hi, this is Kay. I have one question I haven't heard any of the candidates or the president talk about, and that's the war.
Which one?
All of them in the Mideast, especially Afghanistan.
Philip.
I think that it's sort of an interesting thing. I think one of the reasons is that that there's actually a lot of internal debate within the Republican Party as to what sort of the foreign policy views should be going forward. And I think that there's an interesting debate right now because it's kind of nuanced. But basically, among Republicans, at least the way that the things have traditionally played out, at least, let's say, in 07 during that presidential campaign. Other than Ron Paul, every Republican was pretty much in agreement with sort of this idea of a very, you know, of sort of supporting the surge in Iraq and, you know, supporting a strong presence in Afghanistan and so forth. I think that what you've seen is sort of a reshuffling of those cards in the 4 years, you know, since. And part of people see that as maybe the Republicans moving back toward a more restrained foreign policy approach. But I think part of it is a little more nuanced than that.
And we need to stop at that point. Philip, thank you very much. We're out of time for being with us. Philip Klein, senior writer for the Washington Examiner. We also thank John Nichols, associate editor of the Capital Times, Washington correspondent for The Nation magazine, for giving us our All Things Political this hour. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing the hour, and thanks to Rhonda Fanning as well for on-air production here in our downtown Milwaukee studios. Stay with us. News ahead, and we'll return.